That Walter Payton, nicknamed Sweetness, would be voted into the Football Hall of Fame was never in doubt. He broke the NFL career rushing record that had been established by Cleveland Browns great Jim Brown, was named MVP twice, appeared in 9 Pro Bowls, and played on the Bears team that won the Super Bowl in 1986. Payton, who died in 1999, seemed to be an upbeat fellow. He participated in charitable events and, even as he was dying, encouraged everyone he could reach to consider organ donation. That's no doubt how he would be remembered were it not for a new book titled Sweetness, The Enigmatic Life of Walter Payton. Jeff Perlman is the author of that book, and he joins me now from NPR's New York Bureau. Jeff, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thank you. I hope you still remember that way, actually.
I'm sure you do.
I really do.
Before we get into the particulars of the book, NFL.com rates Walter Payton as the 5th best player of all time. Have they got that about right?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, you can argue, you know, anywhere from 1 to 10. The thing that I think gets lost is when people talk about the all-time great athletes in the NFL, they never mention Walter Payton. They mention Willie Gault, Deion Sanders, Herschel Walker, guys like that. And Payton was just this insane athlete. He could walk 100 yards on his hands. He was about 5'9 and a half. He could dunk from standing under a hoop. He could hit a golf ball a mile. He could throw a football 70 yards. He had the softest hands. He was an insanely gifted blocker. He just could do absolutely everything. So I think definitely one of the top 5 NFL players of all time, but also one of the probably top 20 athletes to ever play the game.
You mentioned several times, and I'm quoting now, the insecurity that often accompanies greatness. I've heard that phrase applied to Mickey Mantle, among others, but what accounted for the insecurity in Walter Payton's case?
You know, I actually think, to be honest, I think it started at Jackson State. And it's a small, you know, at the time, Division II college. Nobody pays him much mind. And he's watching Archie Griffin of Ohio State. He's watching Anthony Davis of USC, Steve Barkowski at Cal. And seeing all these guys get talked about for the Heisman Trophy. And here's Walter Payton, this just insanely gifted athlete. But he's running over teams like Bishop College, you know, and Alcorn State. And nobody's paying him much mind. And as his career progressed and he made it to the NFL, whether it was, you know, Billy Sims or Otis Anderson or Eric Dickerson or Marcus Allen, he'd always look at other guys and ask his teammates, do you think that guy's better than me? Do you think that guy's better than me? I mean, the day his last game after 13 years and he's in the locker room changing, and someone says, hey, Walter, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, 13 damn years, and they still don't call me Mr. Payton.
Hmm. You spoke with many of Walter Payton's former teammates, some of whom regarded his behavior as, I'm quoting again, strange. What were they referring to particularly?
Well, there were a couple of things. Number one, he had a very off-putting sense of humor, very off-putting. He was a guy who would throw, like, you know, his balled-up, sweaty socks at your head and think it was really funny. And guys, you know, put up with it, but never loved it. And the other thing, he had a very high-pitched voice, a falsetto, and he called a teammate up on Thanksgiving, and the wife answered the phone, and he goes in his high-pitched voice, he goes, "Hi, is Thomas there?" And she goes, "Who's this?" And she says, "Well, this is, this is Veronica. Can you just tell him that the baby needs shoes? If he can call me, I need that money for the baby's shoes." He did this great women's voice, much better than mine, and the guy comes back, the football player comes back, and Thanksgiving dinner hasn't been cooked. All his stuff is thrown outside. And he's like, "What's going on here?" And she's like, "Who's Veronica?" And blah, blah, blah. And he did this countless times to teammates and oftentimes with success. He used his high-pitched voice in very, very mischievous ways.
Walter Payton and the people who worked with him were very conscious of his image. Describe the version of Payton that he and his wife and associates created while he was alive and that was sustained after his death, and tell me whether you considered that image valid before you undertook the project.
Well, I can answer that. I certainly did. And first and foremost was this sort of, I would say, family man. You know, happy marriage, me and Connie and me, et cetera, et cetera. Connie in the front row of the Hall of Fame. Connie doing commercials with him, you know, and he actually didn't live with his wife for the last 10 years of his life. They were separated, but they sort of maintained this kind of image of the happy Mr. and Mrs. Walter Payton. And Bear fans loved him and should have loved him because he signed every autograph. You could interrupt him at dinner. He would sign every autograph. Michael Jordan and Walter Payton are sort of the, and maybe Ernie Banks are sort of the, that's the big holy trinity of Chicago icons. And the difference between Jordan and Payton is Jordan was certainly a better player in the history of sports, but Walter Payton was 10,000 times more touchable and reachable by the fans, and that makes him beloved. They tried to paint this sort of picture of happy-go-lucky Walter Payton, and he was a sort of iffy businessman. His family life was in shambles. physically, he was in a lot of pain and using a lot of painkillers. And everyone expects this thing of you. Everyone expects this sweetness, this image of you. Your sweetness. He's sweetness. This guy's sweetness. Everyone wants autographs and smiles, and they don't want to know the sort of the hurt that's going on. And he was really, really, really hurting.
Beyond the depression, I gather there were serial infidelities and one illegitimate child that Peyton chose not to acknowledge.
It's funny, when you write a biography and you spend 3 years working on it, you really get into someone. And there are certain things when you find out you don't especially want to know. I'm going along writing this book about Walter Peyton, sort of loving him, and there's this one inexplicable. I can understand, obviously, the depression and a failed marriage, et cetera, et cetera. But he had an out-of-wedlock son who was born a couple of months before his daughter was born. He never lived very far from the kid and never showed any interest. He took financial care, but never showed any interest. And in fact, one of his friends told me a story. One time on a lark, she took him to a palm reader, Walter Peyton, and the woman holds Walter Peyton's palms, and she says, "I see that you have three children." And he pulls his arms away and walks out. I think if you want to talk about things that haunted him, that he sort of didn't know how to deal with. He was very good at compartmentalizing things, but I think it definitely sort of weighed on him that he knew there was a child out there who was his, who he had nothing to do with.
Given what we now know about chronic traumatic encephalopathy, do you think multiple concussions, diagnosed or not, might account for some of Peyton's bizarre behavior?
I mean, it's certainly possible. And, you know, Connie, his widow, I saw her in an interview recently say that she wished, or, you know, it's something to think about. And I agree with that. The problem is, and I actually got criticized, one of the criticisms I got for the book was, how could you not delve into this? And the reason I didn't delve into it is because he died in 1999. He was immediately cremated after he died, and there was nothing, there are no studies done whatsoever. So is it possible? It's certainly possible. I do think what I know for sure, though, is that he really battled severe depression related, at least in some part, to sort of the aimlessness and helplessness of being an ex-athlete.
Mike Ditka, who coached the Bears during part of Walter Payton's career, has said that he's prepared to spit on you for writing about Payton's infidelities, his drug use, suicide threats, and so on. What do you make of objections like that to the book?
Well, first of all, I now carry around, actually NPR was very gracious and gave me a paper cup that I'm holding in front of me. So now, if Mike Ditka spits on me, I will take this paper cup, wipe the spit off the paper cup, put a lid on it, and sell it on eBay to the highest Chicago bidder. And I will even throw in a copy of my book for free with the spit on it if you want. You know what? To be honest with you, Ditka actually was pretty contrite a couple of days later. He appeared on a show in Miami, and they played some comments I made in reaction to it where I said, you know, here's this guy who, Mike Ditka, who's devoted a lot of energy and a lot of time in a very good way to sort of helping retired players deal with problems that Walter Peyton was going through. And he's angry that these problems are being talked about. I thought that was ridiculous. And when he heard that, he said, yeah, you know, maybe the guy has a point. What I found frustrating with this book, this is my fifth book, and this is the first time I've had this, is Sports Illustrated ran an excerpt dealing specifically with Walter's final sort of years of life. And everyone decided that I wrote a book to destroy Walter Peyton. Some of the writers wrote things in the Chicago newspapers I just couldn't believe because I hadn't read the book yet. And that's what's frustrating. I keep saying, please read the book. I don't care if you take it out from your library. Read the book and you'll see this is a definitive biography of a fascinating man's life. And part of his life were these troubles. But that's not the man's life as a whole. There was so much more to him. And I just keep saying to people, read the book and you will see, I think, a very fair and honest and accurate and sympathetic portrayal of Walter Peyton.
Jeff Perlman is the author of Sweetness, The Enigmatic Life of Walter Peyton. It's published by Gotham Books, and the author joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Jeff, thank you very much for speaking with me.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. Our intern is Jillian Guybe. And our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view our photo galleries or learn more about this week's music selections, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Only a Game Radio. Our final word comes from Sweetness author Jeff Perlman, who answers my question, why can't I get any of my books on NPR?
Maybe because they're not good. No,
oh!
I'm just kidding.
Okay, forget it. Totally this is kidding. Off. This is gone. Oh. Okay, laugh all you want, Mr. Sweetness Biographer Guy. You just wait until I write the Jeff Perlman biography, and it'll be good. Oh, it'll be real good, and it'll be on NPR. Don't you worry about that. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day at wallacefoundation.org. And American Jewish World Service, supporting local solutions to global challenges at ajws.org. This is NPR.